everyone, and welcome to the Moth House Games Podcast. My name is Delton. I'll be your host today, and with me, as usual, is my lovely wife and yellow player, Haley.
Howdy, partners. My great-grandma used to say howdy all the time. My great-grandma who passed away in 2019, and I haven't heard howdy being used much since, so I'm trying to bring it back.
I think we say howdy to each other quite often.
Howdy.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
That's like my favorite Toy Story quote.
Like, I'm trying to bring it back beyond Toy Story. Like, just make it part of the everyday vernacular.
Oh, I don't know howdy. Why, but sure. But yes, welcome to the Moth House Games Podcast. This is episode number 169.
Nice. It's a very nice episode.
We are a podcast all about board games, card games, tabletop games, role-playing games, dice games, things of that sort, and beer.
Beer brought to you by our lovely benefactor. Oh no. Pour. Yeah, you did it. So yes, today's beers are the first two in the set of many that our lovely benefactor Ben has financed for this podcast. We have a couple of fantastic IPAs, one that is new from a familiar company and one that is familiar to us. And we are starting off with the beer from Tups America.
So this first beer is brewed in Texas by Tups Brewery. This is their Fresh Squeezed Juice Pack Hazy IPA. It is a hazy IPA with 6% alcohol by volume in a 12-ounce can. It says it is super crushable.
So we've never had this Tups beer, but there has never been a Tups that we haven't liked. I think that Tups is probably one of our most favorite brewing companies.
They just do a good job on everything so far. This has a lightish color. It's a light color with some haze in it, like it's supposed to as a hazy IPA.
It looks very carbonated.
It does look very carbonated. Let's give it a sniff here. It's got a very light smell.
It smells like an orange gummy bear.
Kind of, yeah. It's like a light orange scent, but with some sweet on it.
Heck yeah. Are we going to give it a taste?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Wow.
It's interesting. It starts off, the very initial touch is very crisp. But immediately as it enters like the middle part of your mouth and then into the back when you swallow, it opens up a lot, and the texture of the beer, it almost becomes a little foamy and a little thick. It's interesting.
It tastes like an orange gummy bear. It tastes very gummy
and heavy and
sweet.
I could not tell you what an orange gummy bear tastes like.
It tastes like this beer.
I don't believe you. It's been how long since you've had an orange gummy bear?
Listen.
Exactly.
No, it hasn't been that long. It was last summer because Lakin got a bunch of gummies, and they were vegan gummies.
Those are gummy sharks, not gummy bears. Very different flavor.
I don't know. The gummy sharks taste a lot like the gummy unicorns that we acquired.
They do, but those aren't gummy bears. Gummy bears have a different flavor. Classic.
Okay, well, these taste like orange gummy sharks.
There you go, from Sprouts that are made of, like, beet juice and carrot juice and stuff.
Yeah, but it tastes like it. It has the texture of it, too, because, like you said, it's rich and juicy,
yeah,
and like very full. So it's like you're chewing on a gummy bear, a gummy shark.
Sure. You're a lunatic with your descriptions.
No, I'm
this
accurate.
Is what Ben wants.
I'm a small yay.
You're a small yay.
Yes, that too.
It really is strange how this opens up and thickens up and just it's a very like a full flavored, full textured drink. It's actually like I'm surprised how this has the texture of a much stouter IPA.
Really does.
But it's really good.
Very high alcohol by volume, right?
Six.
That's not bad for an IPA, especially since our second one's going to be about 10.4%.
Yes.
Woohoo!
This one's pretty low in the realm of crazy IPAs, but it's very good. So that is Juice Pack, the hazy IPA out of Tups Brewery in Texas.
What have we been up to, Delty Poo?
We went camping.
We did go camping. Where did we go camping?
Romano's.
What did we do at Romano's?
Camped.
What else we do?
Camped.
Who else we meet?
Campers.
We did. We went to Romano State Park out in Watonga. Finally got to go camping. The last five camping trips we have booked since October of 2022 have been canceled due to weather, me getting COVID, Margie getting cancer, Steve dying, and weather. So it was nice to actually go out and camp for once.
And it was nice because we put the tent right on the bank of this little creek, right above where some of the water was falling and making noise. And it was really nice. I wish we would have got the spot at the back that had the big creek, but that one was all sand and dirt, and where we were was grass, and it was just really nice.
Yes, we got to fall asleep to the sound of water running, so it was a noise machine like the pioneers intended.
And it was like 40 degrees at night, so it was freaking cold.
It was freaking cold.
We definitely need just one, like, camping quilt to throw over the top of us in those moments, because we both woke up, even though our bags are, like, you know, survivability at, like, 25 degrees. That's survivability. Comfort's supposed to be, like, 30, 35. I mean, yes, you could definitely make that work, but I would have had to stuff some clothes in the bottom of my sleeping bag to keep my feet warm. They did their jobs the way they're built to do as a three-season sleeping bag, but it was a little chilly and we could have used just a little extra help.
Which, in our sleeping bag's defense, we were sleeping in t-shirts and very thin pants or shorts because we stood around the fire all night and got our hoodies really smoky, and we could have slept in those hoodies too, but we probably would have woke up with swollen eyeballs.
I pretty much did anyway. That smoke just penetrated everything to the point I washed my hair yesterday on Friday morning, and I said, wow, I can still smell fire in my hair, and I have washed it multiple times heavily. So I don't, it's just, it was a lot of smoke.
I like how we're like, oh yeah, we finally got to go camping. It was freaking cold.
The smoke won't leave us alone.
It was terrible, but it was great.
It was a great time. Very happy to get outside. And it's one of those things where camping, you plan for it. You make sure you have enough food for it. You make sure you have all the gear and enough little, like, you know, propane and your flashlights and your battery backup and your tent and your sleeping mats and your sleeping bags and all the stuff that you want and the creature comforts that you require of your own. And you pack it all in your car and you do all the stuff. And it's always a hassle, but once you're out there, it's just nice to wake up in a tent, a sleeping bag, and it's chilly. You can hear the birds. You make some breakfast of oatmeal with stuff in it and go on a 6-mile hike. And it's just so nice to do, and it makes me want to go backpacking now, which I know we've talked about wanting to do before, but backpacking packs, at least the good big ones that we would want, they're expensive, but it makes me want to be like, okay, this is our next thing. Get a backpacking
pack. After Japan.
Yeah.
Well, it was neat, though. Our friend Eddie joined us for the majority of the trip, and there was one point Friday night where we were sitting by the fire, having some whiskey, listening to the birds, and an owl started to hoot. And Eddie had a call and response going with this owl for probably a good 10 minutes, and all of a sudden, what sounded like 15 crows or ravens just started cackling and scared the shit out of all of us, and we couldn't get the owl to respond again.
So the owl kept flying around, or there might have been multiple. But yes, at one point, the owls or some other bird started going,
but it sounds like multiple.
The way that it was sounding, I don't know if it was one or multiple, but it was creepy as shit. And we were like, oh God, they're going to eat
us.
We
awoken.
We did it. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. It was terrifying and amazing. And then the second night, we had call and response with a couple of camper neighbors.
We did. We got to meet some awesome camper neighbors. They had a dog named Gus, who kept standing there just staring at us on its leash, like, please pet me. So we, of course, asked to pet the dog, and they said yes. We got to pet it, and Gus was very sweet. And then they talked about him being a rescue, and Haley showed him a picture of Margie, our little rescue freaking mutt. And the guy said, oh, are you studying to Haley? Because in the picture, it had her Japanese language books. He said, oh, are you going to Japan? We just came back from our 10-year anniversary trip last fall. And as you know, I think we've talked on the podcast, is we're going for our 10-year anniversary to Japan next year. Talked about it last time.
Last episode, yeah.
And so immediately we went into conversation about what they did. They asked what we were going to do. And one thing led to another, and it's 1 a.m. The bottle of whiskey is gone, and we're all going to bed, smelling like smoke from the fire, exhausted, and having a good time.
It was the best conversation because he is a pilot who's retired Air Force, and she is a public defender who practices remotely in California but lives in Oklahoma. And we just got to hear their stories of where they've traveled, you know, what they do in their jobs and just their life stance. And it was neat. They're about 10 years older than us, so they have about 10 more years of adventure. But, man, they have lived. And it was incredible just to hear their tales and workshop his board game.
Exactly. So that was just a lot of fun. They were great people. Very like-minded to us, which was really nice. And so we all got to just get along and have a good time.
Slide to the left.
And they're also going to Cake in Oklahoma City.
Yes.
When they come through in September, which we're very excited about. And so we're going to get to see them then, hopefully have dinner beforehand.
Absolutely. It was so much fun.
It was.
And so aside from that, we've just been working and coming home. Our friend Kyle and Steven came over Wednesday night to watch wrestling and do some hood rat stuff. And then today we've been just kind of hanging out, doing some chores, getting heartworm medicine, preparing for the week that comes ahead, because Next week is our last full week of work. I guess my last full week of work before we go to Hawaii. So we'll have updates on that. So we'll record one more episode before then. And so we'll have stories about preparation for my big conference coming up. Stories about playing games with Nick and Jennifer tomorrow on the next episode. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Let's jump into this week's stories.
Oh, here's the door. It's straight ahead. It's a game.
So the game for today is one that I do not own, but I have played. We are going to be talking about Dune Imperium and Dune Imperium Uprising, or I guess it's also just Dune Imperium Uprising. So Brian bought Dune Imperium and had really enjoyed it. So I played a game with him of it, just two player, I believe, or maybe it was me, Haley, and him. I can't remember. I get to play it once with Brian, two player. I got to play it again with Brian, his wife, and Haley as well.
Hello.
And then I got to play Dune Imperium Uprising recently with Brian and our friend Dan. So Dune Imperium and Imperium Uprising are effectively the same game with tweaks. Dune Imperium is how I'm going to refer to them collectively, and I will separate out things I recognized from my single play of Uprising as they seem relevant, or I might just do that at the end. But for all intents and purposes, Dune Imperium covers both games very well. Dune Imperium is a combo of a deck-building game and a worker placement game. The game is built and based around the Dune world of the books by, is it Robert Herbert? Does that sound right?
Let me Google it.
Google it real quick. The movies I'm sure you have seen featuring Timothy Chalamet, Shyamalama. Those movies are very popular and have been big hits lately.
Frank Herbert.
It is Frank Herbert. What'd I say? Robert Herbert?
I have no idea.
I don't remember what I said. Frank Herbert's Dune novels. There's a bajillion. But anyway, yes, the Timothy Chalamet-led Dune movies, the second one, Dune Part 2, they are directed by Denis Villeneuve, I believe. Look that up. Denis Villeneuve. He's a French director. Those have came out recently. Part 2 was recent, and everyone really, really liked it. I have not got to see it yet, but I enjoyed Part 1 quite a bit.
I thought David Lynch directed it.
That's the original one from like the 80s or something with Kyle MacLachlan as the lead.
Denis Villeneuve.
Okay, I thought so.
I don't French.
That's okay. I enjoy his movies. Anyway, this is based around that universe. It's around a universe of the planet, the Dune planet, the sand planet that has spice and Arrakis and all these other terms and the Fremen and things that if you're not familiar with the universe are going to make no sense to you whatsoever. But that's okay. You don't really need to know the universe or the world to enjoy playing a board game. So the way this game is going to work is it is like a classic deck builder in which you have a deck of 10 cards. You will draw 5. That's your starting hand. There is a board on the table. There are going to be 5 different factions that you may take actions with, which will bump your reputation with them. There are places for you to harvest spice from the desert, a few places to get some water. There are council or political style places that can do multiple things. And then there is also going to be combat things that happen, which are very easy to resolve, thank goodness. The way the game is going to work is on your turn, you have 2 workers, and I cannot remember what they are called for the life of me. Again, I do not own this game, and I don't have the rulebook in front of me. I suppose I could pull it up, but it doesn't actually matter for this detailed thing. They're workers. On your turn, you can play a card and then place a worker based on some different things on the card. The cards will reference a symbol that corresponds either to one of the 5 factions that you can earn reputation with. It could reference the spice locations on the board, some of the like water or whatever locations. It could reference the political locations, all that different stuff. Whatever it references is where you can place your person, and you can place them there, and you can take the action shown, whether you have to pay something to receive something or just receive something. You know, simple worker placement stuff. Put a guy down, pick some stuff up. You get to do that up to 2 times on your turn. You could do a 3rd time if you unlock your 3rd worker. And I believe in both of the games, Imperium and Uprising, there is the ability to have another kind of dummy worker that you can get for a round. I'm not sure if that's in Uprising or not, but it is in the regular. Now, I say up to 2 actions, up to 2 worker placements, because you could choose to do just 1. You could choose to do none. The times that you place a worker, you'll also, as I said, play a card down and be able to go where that card references. If you do not place a worker and you decide to end your worker placement turns, you do the reveal phase where you reveal your hand of cards left over, and those cards are going to have your purchase value that you can use to buy new cards to put into your deck in the classic deck building sense. So the less workers you put out, the more money you're going to have to buy new cards. You can get, obviously, stronger cards that are good to replace the old ones whenever you have a chance to trash or something like that, but it's classic deck building style stuff. The goal of this game is sort of like Twilight Imperium. Dune Imperium's goal of the game is the first person to 10 points. And at the end of, I think, that round of play, whoever is the furthest along on the point track is going to be the winner. It's generally, I think, the person who hits 10 points, in my experience. You're going to get points by having a very good standing or reputation with the different factions. You're going to get points by buying very high cost cards. And you're going to get points by different military successes. Now, the military is pretty simple in this game. There is a military card out every time you draw new hands and every time you basically reset the turn order where you get your workers back and stuff. Those military cards have a first, second, third place, and depending on the number of players, depends on how many of those you give out and everything.
Basically, you throw a bunch of dudes in an octagon. Whoever has the most dudes in the octagon comes out on top.
Yes, it's very simple, like Haley said. Some spaces say, put people into the battle. And you can say, okay, I want two or I don't. You put them in the battle. Each person is worth 2 strength. There are spots that let you add more people from your garrison to the battle. And then there are cards you can reveal during your reveal step, or event cards that you can reveal as like a ha-ha toward the end of combat that add to that value. But whoever has the highest combat value is the winner. The highest combat value, 99% of the time, is getting the best reward, which is not only taking that card generally, but a lot of times it's a point, or it's multiple resources, or things like that.
That was the quickest way to get spice, I think.
That was a good way to get spice, as certain battles gave you like lots of it. There are spots on the board to trade money for spice, spice for money, things like that. There are also individual cards that you get that is like your character with a special ability. It uses a signet ring. They're all pretty simple. One of them is like, anytime you gain water, gain an extra water. Anytime you gain spice, gain an extra spice. Anytime you buy a card, you can buy a card for one less. It's things like that that are pretty simple, nothing too complicated, and even the complex ones make sense in action once you've gotten, used it once or twice. You completely understand it. It'll be no problem. But I think that's really how the whole game works. Now, the differences between Dune Imperium and Dune Imperium Uprising are simply the spaces on the board, I think, are a little better because there's just a little more to do, and a few of them are now more appealing than the original. The political spaces are ever so slightly different, and they have some other trading spaces, I believe, as well, that make it easier to swap out some goods. Aside from that, I didn't see a massive difference in the game. Personally, I could be very wrong because I played it one time in terms of that version, and I know Brian had cultivated the deck of cards to be something where you could see a little more of the fun cards more often. And so I didn't get to see all of the Uprising-only cards, things like that. But from what I could tell, it is virtually the same game with some minor improvements in different areas. But that's pretty much that game. I do find the game enjoyable. I do not find it as enjoyable as Brian does, I think. Not that I dislike it or wouldn't want to play it if he offered. But I think it's a very fun game. I think the Dune theme is done really well because it's not going to require a knowledge of Dune to play it, but if you have that knowledge, it tickles that interest.
It definitely is woven into the play, too.
It does. It feels like it all makes sense with the theme.
Yeah, it's not just like pasted on for, you know, profit or whatnot. It actually feels like the game was created with Dune in mind.
Yes, for sure. But I did enjoy the game. Dune Imperium is currently number 6 on Board Game Geek.
Really?
That's a lot higher than I would put it.
That's wild.
Not it's bad. I mean, good for them. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
Something I didn't say because I'm a jerk. Dune Imperium is designed by Paul Denon, has artists of Clay Brooks, Brett Nienberg, Raul Ramos, and Nate Storm, and it's published by Direwolf. Dune Imperium Uprising is all the same, except for Derek Herring is listed as an artist, and Brett Nienberg is not. So there's the credits that I completely forgot to do. But I did enjoy the game. It's not my favorite. There are games I think I would pick over it when it comes to deck building and pick over it when it comes to worker placement, but it does have some cool things and it seems to fit decently well together. Like all the mechanics all flow well enough together that it feels like a solid game. It doesn't feel like two mechanics mashed together that feel clunky. It does feel like it works together. It's well tested. It does run. It is a well-oiled experience. I will say there is an app on the Xbox for this game, and I think on computer too. Brian has been playing the app, and he says that it's very, very good, and he really enjoys playing it that way because he can just burn through games, and he's been doing that quite often. So if you want to give this a try, but you don't want to invest the money in the big game, then check out the app. You can probably get it for under $20, I would imagine. And it should be a good way for you to test out what you're looking forward to and to see if the game is for you or not.
My only critique is that it could use more sandworms.
There are more sandworms in Uprising. You can actually recruit them based on if you have the little hooky-doos for your combat for a round.
What?
Yeah.
And I feel cheated.
And Brian had the minis for him because he bought those minis, like the upgrade stuff. And so you could actually use those.
Well, then, we need to do this episode part two so I can play Dune Uprising, ride a sandworm, and give a full honest review.
I mean, there you go. You could. But that's going to be Dune Uprising and Dune Uprising Imperium. I think it's a very fun game. Not my favorite in the world, but absolutely nothing I would turn my nose up at or turn away if someone wanted to play. So give it a shot. Check it out through Direwolf Digital. Go try the app if you want.
And let us know what you think. Much like there are minute changes in the two versions of Dune, but the concept stays the same, so have our game days changed whenever we meet up with friends.
Hey, what can I get you?
I'd like a topic.
Any special way?
Make it a top shelf topic.
Coming up. Enjoy.
So the topic for today's episode is brought to you by Haley.
Hello. So the topic for today is the metamorphosis of game nights. And so Delton and I were trying to come up with the topic for today's episode, and we decided to go a little bit meta rather than just talking about the game. We talk about our experience playing the games. And so really, in the last 12 years or so, what game nights look like for us have changed quite a bit. Not just because, you know, our friends are having children, but also we're all becoming more adults. We're moving away. We are building new friends. And so we just wanted to kind of talk about the process of how game nights have changed over the last 12 years. And I guess just like the flexibility, adaptation, and patience we've had to have. I don't really think there's a lesson to this episode. There's not really an anchor point, but really just a processing how life has changed for one reason or another and how that's affected our game nights for better and for more difficult.
And I think that all of you can latch on to that too. Anybody, dear listener, can think about how gaming or how hobbies in general change throughout your life, and it happens constantly. It waxes and wanes, and I talk about that a lot, that we'll go to a convention, especially BGG Con, and I come back and I'm raring to go playing some games, all hyped about it, and then by the time we get beginning into the new year, into March, I start to just kind of get, you know, I'm playing video games or watching movies, even though I haven't done that this year. It just kind of like starts to slow down a bit, and sometimes it comes back, and that's just how hobbies and interests are. And game nights is one of those things that when Haley brought this up, I thought was a very good little thing to look at, because back in the day in 2012.
In the 20-aughts.
Yes, almost. In 2012, whenever I first started into this hobby is when I was in my own apartment with no roommates, single, and I really didn't have any friends at that point that lived in Edmond anymore. And I got into tabletop on the Geek and Sundry YouTube channel, which was the Will Wheaton-led board game show where they played tabletop games from the modern, you know, board games. And that's when I saw Small World, and I thought, I need that game. Because I think that the Small World episode had Day 9, and it had Grant Imahara, and they had one more person I don't remember. But I watched those and had such a fun time watching those and getting into board games. So I remember going down to Little Shop of Games, which no longer exists, down on Chartel, and purchasing Small World and absolutely wanting to play that game, but had nobody around to play it with.
And that's when you started getting connected with the Oklahoma board game community, right?
That's when I found out about some of those things through Facebook and whatnot at the time. But yes, Nathan, that lives here outside of Edmond, or at least at the time did, I'm not sure where he's at now.
And his cat frog,
which was hilarious and would sound like a frog when you picked it up. It would just, and it was great. But I remember messaging him because he was advertising for game nights and going to his, you know, gigantic house out in like North Edmond and sitting down and playing games, getting to play things like Small World and getting introduced to the garbage time I had with Game of Thrones, the board game, and getting to play My Shadows Over Camelot, you know, bringing that out for the first time. And all these games that I would purchase or they would introduce me to and I could learn, oh, I like this game, I don't like this game. That's where I played Euphoria for the first time. And I still really like Euphoria from Stonemaier. But I remember doing that and getting to meet some of these people. And I feel like it was shortly after that, whenever we started dating.
Hello.
And then I started trying to get you into board games, primarily with 1960 Making of the President.
Which I loved.
Which you loved and still do, and we still have it and the GMT reprint version. But at that point, then, it became me and you playing quite a bit of games together. But I did have Andrew that I played games with quite often.
And this time, too, you did take me to one of Nathan's game nights. And though it was fun, we played Euphoria, and I hated it.
You did at the time.
I did. And so this was whenever it started to change for you where, you know, you played board games a lot. Like, I remember living in Stillwater and texting you, and you said, I got to go to Nathan's for a board game night. And then I wouldn't hear from you until, like, 2 a.m. whenever you're going home. And then this is whenever I started to, you know, our relationship started to become, you know, deeper. And I started to come over more often and kind of stole you away from board game night. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay, because we started to have board game nights, just me and you. Or we would have them, like I said, with Andrew and Sharla. And we would start having little game nights here and there of our own. But even just in that time, the game night shifted from me looking at a game, opening it up, playing with it, going, man, one day I'll play this game, putting it on my shelf, which honestly, I do that now a lot. To me going to a group game night where we're trying to decide how to split up, to then me and you going to a lot of just me and you playing two-player games. And then it slowly, once I became friends with Brian in school, that was when I felt like we started playing games a little more with a few more people, and it like advanced even again.
And there's probably about 5 or so years, and probably still some elements of that to this day, where we were like the board game friends. Like, we would come and bring a game and like teach everyone games. Or yes. You would. I would come over and be like, yeah, I played this before, and not remember how to play anything.
Correct.
But there's the kind of change then from, you know, us being like the board game people to, you know, Brian teaching us games. Or, you know, Zach and Sarah having played some games before. They played Dead of Winter, and so they're already familiar. And so it kind of changed in that way, like our role in our friendships when it came to playing board games.
That's very true. But also board games were a nice way for us to have... Haley can sit and have a conversation with anybody about anything at any time for any amount of time.
Yes.
Board games were my nice buffer between that conversation lull and between not necessarily knowing how to interact with people on that like that, but not knowing how to be 100% engaged the entire time you're in front of a person, or not necessarily knowing, but just being exhausted by it. Like, that is a whole thing. And the board game provides a nice buffer for that communication.
It facilitates that social interaction for you.
Yes, exactly. It facilitates a social interaction, and the beer is the lubrication that allows that to go smoothly.
Chugga, 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 chugga,
just don't have too much. But that was one thing. So we started developing there, and game nights shifted again to where we're introducing friends, and people know us as the board game people, and little do they know, it's not gotten any better. It's all downhill from here, because we have more games than we've ever had. I have zero shelf space.
And you've gotten friends to get games. So Brian has a lot of games. Zach and Sarah have gotten into games. Riley's gotten into games. Like, people have started their own little collections.
Yep.
They've got the bug.
Yep, because you figure out what they like, and you keep down that path and play games with them because you want to have fun. That's why we do this, right? We play games to enjoy the game and to have fun with our friends and hopefully find something that they like and want to play again, and then they purchase it, and that's how you know that you did something right, I think. But it's one of those things where we've done that, and that's kind of, you know, had that metamorphosis and gone through that change. And then now it's changed again the older we've gotten, because life has gotten more difficult to schedule. And not necessarily that everybody's going to be this way, but a lot of our friends have had children. And that really makes it hard, especially in the young years, to schedule those game nights dedicated, make sure that it's full attention on the board game. Everyone pay attention. We're here to play the game. That's not a feasible thing for a lot of our friend groups.
Well, and even before that, I feel like there was a metamorphosis when it came to jobs, because for a while, you know, we worked. So whenever I first met Delton, like, I was a student tutor. I made my own hours, and we both got banking jobs, and he had, you know, a job that took him made him stay at work till 8:30 whenever I got off work at 2. And, you know, with our friends, too, we had half of our friends who were doing shift work, where half of our friends had 8 to 5s. And so trying to coordinate between, you know, he works, you know, the night shift, and he works weekends where he has an 8 to 5 day job. And then trying to coordinate everyone's schedules that way. And now, you know, folks are getting married, having kiddos of their own. They're dedicating their time to their spouse and their kids. And like you were saying, you know, in that first initial stages of little ones being born, like there's a change that's going on now in how we conduct our game days.
Oh, absolutely. Because not only is planning more difficult for game days, scheduling, because I don't know how you parents do it, but it seems exhausting.
And salute all of, to you.
And all of our friends that are parents are exhausted the whole time when their kids are young.
Absolutely. And not that game days still can't happen. They're just, it's different now. You know, we schedule around nap times. You know, we take breaks in the game. Like if we're playing a long game, we might take breaks for a little one to be put down for a nap or for feeding. And it's not bad.
No,
it's just
because
different.
In the end, that game is facilitating extra conversation. It's another reason to get together, but we're still there to spend time with our friends. And I think that's the biggest. You said there wasn't a point of this, and there almost is in my head for myself now, which is actually the understanding that in the beginning I board gamed for board game's sake, but now I board game for friends' sake.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in the beginning it was, I want to play this game, everybody get to, you know, come over so we can play this game. I didn't really necessarily care who was over. It was the game I was super excited about. But now it's like, no, all of us are so busy all the time and have trouble getting together that when we do get to get together, we never play the games that we all plan and line up or the amount that we want to, because we have so much fun just enjoying each other's company, because it's so hard the older you get together and spend that quality time kind of thing. So I feel like that it's just shifted as I board gamed for board games, but now I kind of board game for me.
The board games are kind of that anchor still.
Yes.
Like even though we're not necessarily getting together just to play this game, like we're getting together to spend time with each other, with board games is like that central tenet.
I'm a regular at this restaurant where I used to come only for the food. Now I come because the staff is fun.
Right. That's
you know,
great.
It's like when you go to a bar and you get to learn everybody. I imagine. I wish we had a bar like that. But you go to a bar and they have good drinks and the prices are just right. So you go and hang out. And pretty soon you get to know everyone. And every once in a while you go in and you have a beer because you just want to chit chat with Bart, who's behind the bar and he likes wrestling too. Like, I feel like that's kind of how it's developed a bit as we've gotten a little bit older since frickin' 2012, 12 years ago.
Oh, God, we're so old.
It feels like it.
Well, I want to ask you a question, Del.
Go for it.
Because this, for you, like, you've had a, you know, more intense metamorphosis. I just kind of, like, tagged along at the beginning and then I've been along for the ride. For you, you know, as these changes have made, whether it is, you know, me coming into the picture and, you know, board games going from Nathan's night to more of our date nights, or, you know, moving to these more friend get-togethers, have there been any feelings of grief as you've left one stage and went to the other?
I'm going to say no. The closest is just that I don't get to play games as much as I would like, but that's because I personally feel like I don't have time all the time. Because, for an example, we wanted to do 1989 Dawn of Freedom for this podcast.
Because it's episode 69. It's a commie game.
It was a 69 episode, a 169. And so we were going to do another commie game like Haley chose for the first 69. And I guess I haven't talked about it on the show, but we've had a change of employment at my job. One of my coworkers, who I've been with for 7 years, got a new position in the bank, which I think she will be absolutely fantastic at. She'll also make more money in that position. And it's going to be super good for her. But it leaves me and my buddy, my other coworker, a 50% workload increase because there was 3 of us in our job. So I've been very busy, which means I get home and I don't want to do anything. I don't have the energy to learn a GMT game like 1989 and then to find time to teach Haley the game and play the game, which is probably a 3 to 4 hour endeavor in total, I would imagine. I could be wrong. I haven't dove into it, but...
And I've been falling asleep at 8 o'clock at night because my work's been so busy because we're hosting the American Psychological President here in the next 10 days. I'm trying to make sure everything goes smoothly for that.
Exactly. So there's these things happening where I just feel like I don't have time to sit down because, I mean, I look at my to-be-played shelf.
It's haunting us.
I mean, you see Scholars of the South Tigris, Atiwa, 1989 Dawn of Freedom. I got Colonists and Core Worlds and Blackout Hong Kong. I got the God of War card game. I've got all the Undaunted games over there. Like, there's so many things I just felt like we have not had time to do because we've had to super prioritize different things. And I think that this is a metamorphosis as well, is that sometimes it's not your choice to make that change. And I guess it never is, but there are times with work, with life, with busy, with everything, where it's just difficult. So I wouldn't say that I've had any kind of grief toward any of those moments. It's just that I wish I had, or I wish I perceived that I had more free time. I feel like sometimes my perception is I don't have time when I do. The problem is I'm tired because work has been so busy the past 2 weeks and you've been so busy that I also don't then want to burden you with sitting down and making you use your brain and think for 2 to 3 hours. So I feel like that there's just that element that can happen to probably anyone. I imagine this is how people with kids feel, except it's a child rather than then just themselves going, I want a snack. I'm hungry. Wah.
I just have to deal with Delton doing that.
Exactly. You deal with me doing it. I deal with myself doing it. They deal with a third person doing it. So maybe that's it. But yeah, I say that was it. I'm not grieving anything except for I wish I had more time to actually play my games.
But do you ever look back at some of those stages whenever you had more time? You can answer honestly, like before I came along and like you were able to, you know, go to those board game nights until like 2 o'clock in the morning. Do you ever like find yourself missing that or grieving that loss of freedom?
No.
No?
I think it's because as much as I enjoyed those and I made acquaintances with those people are not my close friends.
Yeah.
You're my best friend. We got married. There's a reason. Brian, I talk to all the time. We hang out so often. When Kyle comes over, we sit down and play heavy games or do music. Like, I made acquaintances. I made people that I could probably call like loose friends. Some of them probably don't remember my name at this point. That's fine. But I wanted to, again, play games with my good friends if possible. And I feel like the thing I've gotten less time to do those kinds of events, but I've gained more true friends that I could spend time playing games with. So it's kind of shifted. It's 90% game, 10% friend. Now it's 90% friend, 10% game, and I prefer that.
It's kind of going back to that gaming values episode we did and
yes.
Episode 149. Like your values underlying the games have changed. Like we used to value like playing the games. Now it's the interactions and the connection that you really value.
I think so. I mean, there's a reason we go to BGGCon. Yes, there's all kinds of fun games to play. We go because the friends we get to see, right?
Absolutely.
If we weren't friends with all the people that we are there, it wouldn't be a con I was so excited about every year.
Right. Like, so. I remember talking about TokenCon. We always have so much fun at TokenCon, but this year we were nervous because we're like, man, are we going to know anybody there? And, you know, there's so many fun games to play at TokenCon. It's great, but we're just like, part of it for us is being able to connect with our friends. And sure enough, when we got there, we saw so many friends. We saw so many designer buddies. We got to, you know, catch up with people. We made new friends. Like, it was great. And TokenCon, even if we didn't see those friends, it would be great. But for us, like, that's really what we're pursuing. And I guess you're right. Like, that, I feel like that's kind of changed for both of us.
I think so. And in the end, that's what you want, right? You want to play these games and you want to enjoy the board games. And the board games are so much fun. But when you enjoy the people around the table, that's what makes it special. You know what I mean? And that's why we do it. That's why we still do it. If the board game itself was the only component that I cared about, I would just play video games all the time. Why would I bother with board games? You know, I've got enough awesome video games I'm going through that I'm like, yeah, this is so great. But then a friend comes over and instead of being like, here, grab a controller, we can play or watch me play this. I'm like, no, let's sit down and play something together that we can enjoy and have fun doing together in this relationship of whatever level. So yeah. We did it. I would ask you if you've had any grief or any similar things like that, but I feel like you've just been like, I like board games, what we doing?
I like board games, what we doing? Well, for me, it's board games have always been in my life because of you, and I love board games, and I've learned to really appreciate the hobby, you know, and I've integrated the hobby into my career. You know, I lecture on incorporating board games in the therapy using evidence-based methods. Like, I've done a lot of work in that, and I'm very grateful for that, but really, it's just been... I've kind of piggybacked on the hobby. And as I think for me, it's always really been like that social connection. Cause when you first brought me into the hobby, it was, I'm going to play this game because I like this sweetie of mine. Like, I wanted to play this game with you because it was important to you. And so through that, I've learned to appreciate and love board games. And I still love board games. You know, I've developed my own favorites. I've developed, my own tastes, and I really appreciate the hobby. But I think for me, it's always been about that social facilitation.
I can see that, but you've also been a much more social person, where if you walked into a room and everyone was doing something as an activity, you would look rather to who's not doing an activity that I can talk to. I feel like that's always been you as a person anyway. And I've always been the person of which corner can I hide in, or which activity is the least social. So
yeah,
I feel like we've also brought each other. I've brought you down from being only social to being able to focus on activities and enjoy them. And you've been able to bring me out of my antisocial, where I can walk in a room and usually communicate a little awkwardly, but still do it.
You make connections with people so easily now.
That's because I don't understand social cues, or at least I didn't for a while.
That's how I became friends with Brian.
That's how I became friends with Brian. Me and Brian worked on a project because I went to graphic design for a year before I dropped that degree field, because the UCO program here, after 2 years, you have to apply to continue, and they can choose to reject or accept you in that program. So yes, that program gets a lot of awards and a lot of accolades and a lot of people that are high performing. And it's because they tell the other people, hey, we know you've spent 2 years of your money on tuition, but you can't continue. We don't think you're good enough, which seems to me, makes me mad. It seems to me like that's the opposite of what school's about. Whatever. But anyway, in one of those classes, we had to do a Rube Goldberg machine. If you don't know what that is, imagine that you push a ping pong ball off a table. The ping pong ball hits a mouse trap, which pulls the mouse trap flap thingy, pulls a string. The string goes under a door and moves a toy car, and the toy car does something, and then 40 different little steps later, it presses the enter key on your keyboard. That's a Rube Goldberg machine. It's, let's see how complex we can make the simplest tasks. They're very fun to build. Well, we got put in groups randomly, basically. They decided our groups for us, and Brian was in that group, and so we all had to work together. And then, like, the next class we had or something, Brian was in there sitting down, so I just sat down next to him because, hey, we've been working together. He's been, you know, an enjoyable person to work with.
And Brian's entire monologue was, who is this guy?
Yeah, Brian's
like, what is he doing?
What's this dipshit doing sitting next to me? And I just basically inserted myself like a leech and was just like, hi, we work together. How are you? Hi, I know your name. Hi. And now we're friends. And I don't know if he regrets that yet, but we'll find out.
He's one of our best friends. He and Jessica are some of our very best friends.
Yes.
And it's all because you didn't read social cues and just inserted yourself into his life. So it worked out.
100%. He continued through that degree program and graduated because he's a good graphic designer.
And kicks ass.
Yes. But anyway, yes, there's that. I forgot where that even came from now, but
end of the day, gaming brings people together. Gaming days change. Just roll with it. Have fun, and maybe enjoy an adult beverage, if that's your thing. Speaking of that, what are we drinking?
And now, join us for a Malt House Games podcast special, Pint Size Question.
Also, that was the smoothest transition ever. That was not a segue with square wheels. That was very round wheels.
Round wheels?
Very round wheels.
Sure, they're perfect balls.
Perfect balls.
So... before we answer the question for this episode that was also brought to you by Haley, we're going to drink some of the second beer because I rambled forever in the last section. So,
not at all. It was a good conversation.
I think so. This is, again, courtesy of Ben. Thank you, Ben. This is Color Blast from Skydance Brewing Co. Skydance Brewing Co. is Oklahoma's first all-native-owned brewery. Pretty much, I'm going to say they specialize in IPAs. I know they have some other. They have a red that's good. I want to say they have a stout, but I'm not sure.
But all their IPAs are just stellar.
They have a bunch of different crazy IPAs. This one is called Color Blast. The can looks like the people during a color run when you just get splattered with...
Absolutely, it does.
Paint stuff. Yeah.
That's a great description.
Thank you. This is Color Blast, their hazy quadruple IPA with Nectaron and Alora hops. It is a 1 pint or 16 ounce can at a whopping 10.2% alcohol by volume.
That's why I wanted to wait so long in this episode, because this is a beer that we're probably going to be sipping on, at least me, I'm going to be sipping on for the next hour or so beyond the podcast.
I'm going to guess in 4 hours you're going to go, I can't finish it, my tummy, and you're going to make me finish it.
Are you really opposed to that?
No. I have it poured. It is a hazy, cannot see through it at all yellow color. Very good head retention.
Smells very bitter.
It does have a bit, the smell of it is the stringy and rind of an orange, mm-hmm. where there's that bitterness involved.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
We're chewing on some marmalade.
It is a full mouth feel with this nice, super nice citrusy middle that's not overly... The citrus... Here's the thing. Tell me if this makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
The citrus does not taste sweet.
It does not.
But the beer tastes sweet.
Yes.
So, which is kind of strange. It doesn't taste like you're eating an orange. It tastes like you're getting citrus flavor, but then you're also getting this malty sweetness with it. And then the way that it finishes very foamy, and it kind of the flavor drops for just a second. And then you get this aftertaste of hops that just real quickly blooms in. And it's slightly, I don't want to say earthy because I like earthy. It is the tiniest bit floral with some just like nice, I don't know what it is. Like taste it and focus on the aftertaste after you swallow and tell me what that is. It'll go away, then all of a sudden that hop comes in. That's such a nice effect and taste.
It's almost like the smell of like a freshly cut down tree. Not pine or anything, but if you ever cut down a tree and you smell the wood.
Like a green limb.
Mm-hmm, like a green limb.
Like it's still growing real early.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that. So it's not piney, it's not earthy, but that floral... Maybe slightly, like, woody, but
yes.
I don't know. It's really good.
It's Youngwood.
Youngwood. Hey, that's my rap name. Youngwood.
Youngwood.
Yep. It's, this beer's fantastic. So here's the thing. We bought a 4-pack.
We did. Only a quarter of the payment came from Ben's fund.
Yes, I wanted to get some Skydance IPAs, but the place that we buy singles from had like no singles of any of their good IPAs. They had like two of their beers only, and one of which was their red ale. And I said, okay, I want this freaking, it's a quadruple IPA. I have to. It sounds amazing. And so we bought the 4-pack. A quarter of that cost came out of the donation from Ben toward IPAs. So we took care of the other 3/4. I don't know why I almost said 3/5. And then we drank the 3 IPAs. So we've had this before, but only recently. And my God, it's such a good beer.
It is such a great beer. This is along the... So Oklahoma City is just now really developing infrastructure for public transit. And they created a streetcar. And there are about 5 breweries along the path of the streetcar. And this is one of them. And so, Ben, we need you.
Yep.
To come to Oklahoma City.
Yep.
Bring your sweetie.
Yep.
We're going to take you on the little trolley.
Yep.
We're going to go beeping around Oklahoma City, and we're going to have some good IPAs, including Skydances.
Because, let me think. There's Skydance.
There's Skydance. There's Prairie.
Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
There's Vanessa House.
Yes.
Twisted Spike's no longer there. And Elk Valley's no longer there.
Elk Valley's no longer there. There's another one that I'm missing.
It's not Stone Cloud. They're over by Film Row.
Stone Cloud's by Film Row, which that's another good area because there's Stone Cloud over there. There's also Angry Scotsman's
not far from there.
Yes.
Anthem's
not far from there.
Also great vegan food at Loaded Bowl. Oh, God.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ben.
There's another brewery or two in there, but yes.
Come here.
It's a nice little streetcar. The streetcar's like $2, but there's also passes you can buy for the whole afternoon. It's great, but we haven't even answered the question. Question for the episode from Haley.
Since we're talking about metamorphosis, what animal would you anamorph into if you could?
I need some ground rules laid here.
No.
This I can't remember how anamorphs works necessarily.
You remember the cover.
I remember the cover, but...
When you become that little critter.
Do you keep your intelligence?
Yes.
Okay.
You're aware that you
imagine.
Are...
I imagine.
Yes.
So my thought was, well, if I become like a beetle, I'm just like, I'm a beetle. And that's all my
you're
brain
like,
can think.
Love me do.
I hate you. I hate you so much. If I could anamorph into any animal.
I'm funny.
You're something. I would anamorph into, I don't know, what sounds the most fun? Anamorph into a raven, because they're freaking cool. They fly a lot. People like them. They feed them stuff.
Sounds dope.
Yep. What about you?
I think it'd be really fun to anamorph into a whale.
Horrifying.
Yeah, but then I would... One, I would develop a healthy respect for the ocean rather than uncontrollable fear. Two, I get to swim back and forth between Alaska and Hawaii like twice a year.
So you'll be a humpback whale.
Oh, hell yeah. I'll be a humpback whale. And then I just eat a bunch of baleen and just cruise along the street with my mouth open, catching my baleen. I have my baleen to catch the little krill.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's the baleen in the mouth that catches the krill.
The weird teeth things.
So I'm just like cruising along with my mouth open, catching food, going back and forth from Alaska to Hawaii. That sounds dope.
Well, there you go. Anamorph tax-tastic.
Absolutely.
It's a mesomorph. I tried.
Boo.
Anyway, that's going to be it for this episode. Thank you so much to our amazing Patreon patrons, Alan, Jennifer, and Cliff, for supporting us at a level in which you get shouted out on the podcast. Thank you again, Ben, for the wonderful IPAs. You will be hearing Ben's name shouted out several more times.
As long as we can record these not at 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, so thank you all for tuning in and listening to the Malthouse Games podcast. You can make sure to find us on social media at Malthouse Games, M-A-L-T-H-A-U-S Games. You can find Haley at
S-Q-U-I-R-R-E-L-L-Y-G-E-E-K.
That is at Squirrely Geek. You can also send us an email if you have a topic you want us to cover, a game you think we should find and play, a question you want us to answer, or a beer we need to look for. Send it to contact at malthousegames.com. You can also... I think that's everything. I don't know. I feel like I'm forgetting stuff. I'm freaking hungry now.
Let's go make some ramen.
Let's make some ramen. So thank you again for tuning in and listening. Oh, be sure to like, share, and subscribe. All that good stuff. And also, until next time, sit back, relax, grab a drink, and play some games. We'll see you folks later.
Goodbye.
Bye.